You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Feeling good after a crew 2-0 victory over Nashville. But I got to tell you guys what, as we enter into another Massive Report podcast, that was not a fun game to watch. I'm still a little shaky. After the, 120 minutes, if you do the math, it was only about the last 15 minutes that I felt good. Hopefully the next hour or so, you will feel good as we talk about your Columbus Crew SC and another edition of the Massive Report podcast. I'm Brian, Ori's here, Alex is here, Bart is here, and we've got a lot to go over, and you're helping us out as well with your Twitter questions, and we'll have one pretty soon after the jump as we get into a review of the Nashville-Columbus game. We'll also look ahead to an interesting New England team. So often in MLS, the season is so long. There's so many story arcs that if your story is compelling at the right time, you can make noise in the playoffs. And New England is doing that. So we'll see how concerned we are, given all the teams we could have played. So a lot to go over tonight. So let's start with this question. I'll just throw it out to the panel. Did anyone have a good time watching that game on Sunday? No?
Bart's still muted.
Yeah, I'm still muted there.
Anyone?
I don't know if I would call it good, but I actually did not feel as I am not down with all the hype that, you know, Crew was just garbage that game and that this was
a no
game
no no that's not into, what I'm saying at all.
Yeah,
this game went, if I was to write the the movie script of Columbus Nashville, that would have been my script. I knew this was going to happen, and yeah, maybe that made it harder for me to watch. It was like, the only thing I didn't know is if it would turn out all right after, a few funny bounces there early on in the first half.
And here's the thing. I mean, obviously there's that span of, you know, about 20 minutes toward the end of the first half where the game really tilted into Nashville's favor. And, of course, you got Dax McCarthy or McCaffey putting one off the post. That looking great, but Columbus really, I mean, even though they, you know, weren't necessarily generating as great of chances, when you do look at the actual numbers, they had more chances, more quality chances than Nashville did. And this is a team that you felt like, we've seen this Columbus team score goals and Caleb Porter team score goals off the counterattack as well as anyone else in MLS this year. So you didn't feel too much like, you know, they couldn't be caught on this. You had Lucho Diaz, who I want to talk a lot about, you know, we can go a bit later, but he put in a terrific performance. And I thought this team was creating good chances. I thought they were due one in the 90. But by the time they finally did put that one in, it you could tell it broke Nashville. And I think Nashville's, you know, could have been broken earlier.
Yeah. I mean, you could see what they wanted to do, and it was their best chance to win, was to play exactly how they played. And it didn't work out. And you could see that second goal coming, because they had to get out of what they were doing because it wasn't working anymore. They were fine scoring off a set piece, which they nearly did twice, and it didn't work out. I mean, they're playing the money ball version until they get more players in-house, but you have to be impressed with what they've done in their first season, obviously. And, they're going to be a handful going forward. Ori, how much do you think that the Crew learned in watching the film of the Nashville-Toronto game? I think they learned a lot.
Definitely. I mean, I think you always learn from the film session, but I think when you see that game, it was sort of a different type of game that Nashville was playing, just because You saw Toronto. They just weren't out there trying to control the tempo. To me, that was the key to this Eastern Conference semifinal. And if Columbus was going to come away with the victory, which they did, is keeping possession, controlling the tempo, and then in any situations where you lose possession, which happened a couple of times, make sure Nashville is not making runs on the counterattack and getting through on goal. And that didn't happen at all throughout the course of the match because Mensa, Williams, Afful, and Milton were very organized back there defensively. Artur was coming back as well in like a third center back role as well. And, you know, you also have to credit Nagby too. He played a little bit deeper also to avoid any potential counterattacks, but Columbus just kept the ball, controlled the tempo. That was what was important in this game in order to just get that goal. Nashville's defense is one of the best in the league. They've been that way all season. They're so organized with Walker Zimmerman leading the line. Dave Romney also had a great game. They were intercepting everything that was in sight for them to intercept. They were dispossessing Zellerayan and Santos throughout the first half and in parts of the second half. But that goal, the first one, that was just a phenomenal counter from Columbus. I mean, that pass from Zellerayan, it was pitch perfect. You know, sure. Outside the foot curling, Zardes making that run towards the byline on the wing, and then calm and composed. That's what Jossie Zardes is in situations where he needs to be clutch. In that situation where he needed to find the right pass, you had four Nashville defenders running back defensively, getting back into the box. Santos found the pocket. Had an open chance, converted. And then obviously as soon as you score first against Nashville, you have a good chance to win. And Jossie Zardes mentioned that after the game. He said we knew going in that if we scored first, we had a very good chance to win this game because that makes Nashville open up. That opens up defensively, and then it could be, you know, all guns blazing. And I'm sure Caleb Porter's thinking to himself, man, we could have won this game 3-4-0. And he's had that thought a lot throughout the course of the season. There's been many games where the Crew should have scored a lot more goals. They've missed up some chances, some mental decisions offensively, but this was another very, very good performance. And they're riding high. They played really well against a team that was on a roll, who just beat the juggernaut of the Eastern Conference for the last 5 years, basically.
During the telecast, our own Ali Marino was really hard on Nashville's Mokhtar and basically said that he didn't start playing until we scored. I don't know if Bart, you noticed that if you were paying attention, he was blistering in his criticism. And this was a guy who was key to that big upset win over Toronto.
No, and I think that was kind of one of the other differences is, yes, of course, every single ball we sailed into the Nashville box, you know, Romney is on it. But at the same time, their difference maker, Hani Mukhtar was just in their pocket. We were picking his pocket all match. He's giving the ball away. And Nashville, you heard Ali Moreno talking about it. Just Nashville couldn't ever get anything going. And you had, you know, good and other players, guys like Pedro Santos, who, you know, it's old hat to, you know, compliment his defensive game. But again, he's going back there, taking balls away. So when Nashville did have the chance to counter, you had Columbus coming back on defense, as you alluded to, Darlington Nagby playing a little bit lower than normal. And that really allowed Columbus, but for, I'd argue, that span in the second, to really minimize any chances, any decent chances Nashville had. We, you know, overlook the fact that Columbus obviously wasn't getting a whole lot of great chances at the other end, but they did have the ball more often than not.
Well, and to that point on Darlington Nagby, Charles dropped us a question at Massive Report on Twitter. Was Nagby playing too deep defensively in the first half, or was it the right conservative move to limit Nashville? Ori, was that discussed post-game? Did it come up? What are your thoughts?
It didn't really come up because the one thing tactically that Patrick Golden was noticing a lot when we were at the match, me, him, and Pat Murphy, was the way that Columbus was sort of – if you look at the passing chart, especially in the first half, you could see the middle of the field, there were no lines because Columbus was trying to play down those wings, especially through Luis Diaz, to try and avoid Zimmerman and Romney as much as possible because Caleb Porter knows how good they are. But Nagby dropping deep, I get it. It makes sense. because you have someone like Diaz who's going to offer you that speed on that right side. So maybe you're going to avoid that counter while you have Diaz running forward. You had Zelarayán and Santos sort of interchanging as sort of roamers in the attacking midfield. Zardes was coming back as well. So you saw guys coming back. There was a good movement between the formation backwards and forwards. But, you know, between the two midfielders, I thought Artur was the standout performer. He came back on defense quite a bit, and he was in the right place at the right time essentially every single time. Nagby was too, but, you know, Nagby and Zelarayán didn't have the overall flashy performance that sometimes we're used to seeing. You know, Nagby scored against the Red Bulls. We saw Zelarayán get some goals in the back half of the season, and he's been able to be such a catalyst for the Columbus Crew in general. But, you know, you're going back to the old reliable guys that the Crew have had for the past couple of years, like Santos and Zardes, who are the ones that are getting the assists and the goals in the situation. But the whole team has played very well in these two games. They commanded the Red Bulls game. They commanded the Nashville game. Now it's a question of whether they can command the New England game against Bruce Arena, who some will say might be the best manager in MLS history and is taking an 8 seed to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, I don't know if Alex agrees with that or not, but and we'll get to the elephant in the room, which is who's positive, who's negative, who might be out. I mean, there's only so much that we can do beyond speculation, and we'll get to that. But Alex, I was talking to my wife during the game. I said, well, in a way, this is kind of like Caleb Porter's dream, playing his starting 11 beyond 100 minutes before he remembers that he has substitutes. It was like I remember when my daughter was playing club soccer, and it was during prom season, and you'd always have like three young ladies in the roster would go, I'm going to prom, so I won't be going to Dayton for the Dutch Lions Cup. So you'd play, and that's my imitation of teenage girls. You'd go to Dayton with a roster of 11 or 12, and you'd play the whole weekend with what you had. And I just started laughing at myself thinking about that, because Caleb Porter ran these same guys out there, and Nashville subbed three or four times before we bothered to sub at all, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, can I touch on the Bruce Arena thing really quick? Bruce Arena is one of the most famous MLS managers of all time, but I don't know if he's one of the best.
All right.
I'm pretty sure he hasn't won anything in Major League Soccer since Will Trapp was in high school. So, I mean, his track record is, you know, not always the best. He's a legend of the league, but I think Porter can take him. But,
all right.
You know, when you look at the Crew and you look at kind of Porter's game plan, I do think, you know, he's fine with just kind of waiting for the moment. Porter seems like one of these coaches who knows what he wants to do whenever he goes into a match, and the team more often than not executes on it when they're healthy. So, you know, I know Bart earlier said that he was a little bit, or we were talking earlier about, you know, the fact that maybe people were a little bit nervous going into that game. And, you know, I'm kind of with Bart where I was not as nervous. I thought, you know, as time went on, our performance got a little bit stronger. And, you know, these guys are ready for it. We have an experienced team. And I don't think there's anybody, whether Arena's coaching them or Jose Mourinho or whoever, like, it doesn't matter. Like, we can go and we can play our game against anybody in this league.
Well, they showed their experience, Bart, because there's nothing that draws on experience more than knowing, as we're ticking towards 90 minutes, that you're going to have to do a lot more work tonight. And figuring out how to draw on reserves of energy and just – they looked fit, essentially, to me. I came out of that match not particularly worried that it drained the life from us. I felt like they looked strong until the final whistle at 120 minutes.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, just one of the benefits of playing, you know, in these playoffs right now and actually getting, for the first time in a while – you know, seven consistent days off. Now you've got to deal with other woes, but, you know, especially for them to be is, and I think they were, you know, maybe they weren't as sharp as some people would like. But again, this is a team also that couldn't train or touch a soccer ball really for a couple days in the middle of that week. In the middle, you know, as you're trying to game plan as well for a, you know, hot Nashville team. Now, I do think Crew also benefited from not playing three games in a 10-game span and another game that had gone to extras, you know, just what, 4 days prior. That certainly, you know, helps. But look, you play to your strengths, and that's what Columbus did. And they also, you know, you're looking for guys. Obviously, Broom is out, and you got a terrific, a strong performance from Andrew Tarbell. And then I think Lucho Diaz just really, really stepped up, filling in for Derek Etienne. He had 4 key passes in the game. He completed 90% of his passes. He was the difference maker, I think. And he, personally, for me, my man of the match, he was the only one, it seemed, to be finding and kind of breaking that back line for Nashville and finding people in the box. And there were, you know, about 3 crosses there in the first and second half that the team had a chance to go ahead on and just wasn't able to capitalize. So to see him pick up that diagonal ball to find what launched Jossie for that second goal that put him away, just so well deserved. And I thought that was a really, really encouraging, mature performance from Lucho Diaz on the biggest stage that he's played in.
And we really needed it because, to your point, I mean, Etienne was out. Mm-hmm. And there was really no one to fill that role. And you saw, I mean, eventually he came out of the match, but it was real late. Oh, and yeah. They needed every ounce of what he had in that match, and he gave it. He really, at his young age of just 21, seemed to grasp the gravity of what was before him, and knowing that really there was no choice. He had to step up in that match, and he did, to your point, Bart. Ari, Caleb Porter talk about Diaz or anybody else specifically after the match to kind of put a point on what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned Diaz and how well he played, and I think everybody is in agreement because, you know, we saw the offense go through him for nearly the entire game. We saw Zellerayan and Santos get the ball here and there for some fouls, for some free kicks, but Luis Diaz was just all over that wing. There were some moments there, though, where, you know, he's 25 yards away and trying a one-time cross when he might have some space to run a little bit more. Yeah. But in terms of decision-making, I think he made some of the better decisions we've seen in a full, you know, resume of a game from him than in other moments of the season. But he is turning into quite a good player. I think he will be way more of a regular starter in the 2021 season, potentially, obviously based on where the scheduling is going to be. We would hope that in 2021, you can have an MLS season that goes from March through the spring and you don't take a 3-month break there and you can actually have a regular season. But he spoke on Diaz. I mean, the thing to take away from the Caleb Porter presser after the game that I thought was interesting, first off, the first thing he said was to congratulate Nashville. And I thought that was, you know, a worthwhile thing to say because Nashville's had such a great season and they have built a roster that is, you know, great mixture of youth and experience in both the boardroom, the coaching staff, and the squad. You know, Gary Smith being an MLS Cup champion coach known for his organized teams, and, you know, with Walker Zimmerman and Romney and McCarty, you know, this team played organized. They played, what, 26 games this season, only conceded 2 or more goals 8 times for a team in their first season in MLS. That's pretty fantastic. Obviously, we didn't see that from first-year MLS teams in the past. You know, obviously the likes of Cincinnati, Inter Miami had their struggles this season, and others in the past as well in this sort of expansion era of Major League Soccer. And then obviously the fact that he mentioned that they didn't kick a ball for 2 days, which, when's the last time a team went into an MLS playoff game having 2 days of literally no training? Probably never.
Yeah.
Because it's unprecedented times.
Well, and speak to that point, Ori, because I think from the outside looking in, we would go, well, what's a couple of days off? That's no big deal. These guys are professional soccer players. What difference do you think it makes for these guys to be away from the practice pitch for even 48 hours that they were expected to be training?
So the biggest thing that Caleb mentioned about that, and I agree with him, is the chemistry aspect. So you did see a little bit of a disconnect between Zardes and Zelarayán and Santos in those early parts of the game because you want to develop that rhythm, especially going forward, because that's really, really important. Obviously, not having training, you're going to be a lot more energized. The team was really energized in the beginning parts of the first half, but then when Nashville started to get more counterattacks, get some corner kicks, almost score off of two of them, you saw Columbus start to, you know, mellow out and slow down. But chemistry is really the biggest thing because 2 days without training and Columbus still dominated this game. And you could think, well, Nashville just played two games. You know, they're training. They're fine. They don't have any COVID cases. But Columbus had a game plan. They stuck to that game plan. You can still do film study and study tactics at home. And they were able to gel into the match. And we'll see how that will work out for Sunday based on what the training schedule was like for this week, because obviously you might have more positive tests coming out within the camp, or we don't know what's going to happen with these players that did test positive. So it's going to be interesting to see. We'll be talking to them throughout the course of the week before this Eastern Conference final, but they didn't kick a ball for 2 days and are still Eastern Conference finalists.
So, Ori, kind of continuing on that point, and there's only so much we can get into because they don't really tell us a whole lot. I don't want to go through a list of guys that we think might be positive because we don't know. Mm-hmm. Broom didn't play. So that's the first point. Do we know if he's going to be cleared yet to be between the pipes on Sunday? Do we know that?
We don't. We will probably find out soon. We'll have to see. You know, it all depends on, I think you have to have 2 consecutive days of negative testing. And since it's PCR testing, and according to MLS rules, you're considered negative. You're considered positive once you receive 2 consecutive positive tests. So I would think after you receive 2 consecutive positive tests, you can't be deemed negative until you receive 2 consecutive negatives. I would think that that's what the rule would be. I am not 100% clear on that, but they need to test negative and make sure that they go through the individual training first, and then we'll see if they get back into the group. Obviously, we did see players not medically cleared to play, but at the same time, it has not been confirmed that they were the ones that were COVID positive. We don't know. It's, you know, we don't want to speculate on that. But, you know, we'll see what happens with, you know, the likes of Room, Etienne, who were on the not medically cleared list for this Nashville game, and, you know, whether or not they will return to the squad. Because in this past Nashville game, Caleb Porter had only 8 people on the bench rather than 9. So you'd hope that hopefully the virus is contained. They were confident in its containment before the Nashville game, and hopefully that containment stays the same way throughout this week.
Well, Bart, you shared a link in our chat here that the Dispatch has some further reporting on this, huh?
Yeah, it looked like there was Jake Myers from the Dispatch reported an 8th confirmed case in addition to one that is awaiting. They're not sure. It had 1 positive test and 1 negative test, so inconclusive. I think, you know, this is a reality, and the hope is certainly that, you know, with either of these new, you know, this inconclusive one and the additional positive, that, you know, maybe these are ones that were tied to these other tests and not, you know, anything that's continuing to spread around the team. I think obviously, first and foremost, the hope is that any players and, you know, family, other close contacts that they have, that they're all doing all right, that they're safe, hopefully on the road to recovery, or, you know, otherwise, symptoms aren't too bad, because this is a scary time. It's one of those things that it is just surreal, and it is hard in the midst of all this. You know, and soccer, I think, is able, and sports are able to be a welcome distraction from this reality that we're all living in and living through. But then when COVID, you know, continues as it does in all of sports now, you know, you've got a NFL game that's going to be played on a Wednesday night.
Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, Wednesday afternoon. Sorry. We can't, we cannot miss the Christmas tree. But that's just the reality we're living in, and you've got to be able to take off, you know, your fan hat and put on your human being hat and just, you know, hope that everyone is going to be okay first and foremost, because this is a game, and I love Columbus, and I want to take the, you know, MLS Cup in 2020, but, you know, not at the expense of anybody, on this roster. Now, maybe some other rosters. Maybe
some, That sounds like Alex. That sounds like Alex. Well, Alex, let's segue into New England. We didn't, at least I didn't expect that we would be talking about them at this point. Your respect for Bruce Arena has already been pointed out. But you have to admit that he has his team playing very well at the right time. They didn't score a lot of goals this year, but they didn't concede a lot of goals either. But it sort of seems like during the playoffs, they're kind of morphing into a more positive attacking team. I don't know if you have had a chance to take a look at them at all.
I saw a little bit of the Orlando game. I mean, they look sharp. They're a team that's peaking at the right time, and that's always dangerous in Major League Soccer. We're a league where any team can beat any team on a given day for the most part. And they looked like a dangerous squad. So it's definitely more concerning to me, honestly, than a lot of teams in the Western Conference have looked so far. This might be one of the toughest teams that we play for the remainder of the season, even if we kind of keep advancing. But you know, it's something that I'm worried about. One thing I just kind of wanted to touch on really quick, since we're talking about the eighth player who got, you know, the positive COVID test, one benefit, if you can call it that, about having home field advantage is that, you know, these guys are not traveling together. You know, they're not all crammed together on a bus or on an airplane, trying to fly out to New England. The fact that we're hosting these games might help minimize the spread. So if they do think that, hey, you know, I know that you spent time with so-and-so last week, you know, maybe you should kind of keep a distance from the rest of the guys. That's a lot easier to do when you don't have to travel. And you're just kind of getting in your car and driving to the stadium or driving to training and then driving back again. So maybe that's a silver lining, but the one question mark for me is not so much around New England. It's around, you know, what does our squad look like when it's game time? You know, if we're having two players who are potentially in trouble right now, does that grow to four by the time the game rolls around? Does it grow to six? You know, what does it look like? So definitely a lot still up in the air, but it's 2020, you know, what can you say? You just kind of take it as you go, and hopefully Caleb and the team can kind of put the best foot forward and try to, you know, feel a competitive squad and get the result.
Well, I think that the same getting away from COVID and things that we can't control. And one thing that the Crew can control against New England is to not do what I saw from Orlando, was some, quite frankly, some lazy defending. The red card to Perea in the 60th minute in that game.
But Nanny should have had one too.
Yeah. And the penalty kick they missed. That was a game for Orlando that lacked focus and execution. And New England certainly took advantage of that. And you got Bow and Heel looking really sharp right now. And they didn't need one of their top goal scorers to contribute, Teal Bunbury, who was tied for the team lead at eight with Bow. And as I say, you know, only 26 goals on the season. But you know, you look at three goals against Orlando, two against the Supporters Shield champions, Philadelphia, two against Montreal as well. They're suddenly putting goals in the back of the net at the exact right time. So, you know, Bruce Arena seems to be getting the most out of this team at the exact right time.
They look really good.
Yeah, they do. And it was kind of sudden.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were kind of saying, you know, I don't like this. This doesn't look good. This is not the team that I really want to play next round. But you got to kind of take it as it comes. But it's going to be a tough match for the Crew. They are a very talented team, and they are peaking at the perfect time. So that plus the issues that we're having right now, it's going to be a scary match. If you thought you were stressed last weekend, just wait for the next round. It's going to be crazy town. So yeah,
essentially, I mean, New England's been a team that's been flying under the radar though throughout the season. You know, they were around the fifth, sixth spot for most of the regular season, but they had a couple of losses there towards the back half. But since October the 11th, they've only lost three games: to Philly at home, to the Red Bulls on the road, and to Philly again on the road. So course, people were probably thinking they're not going to beat Philly because they just lost to them twice in the course of less than a month, but they beat them and they're scoring goals quickly. So for this game for the Crew, they got to make sure they don't concede first, because New England in the last two games have taken a 2-0 lead in the first half, and that's not something that's happened to Columbus really at all this season. It happened, I think, one time in the Chicago game at Soldier Field, and the Crew came back from that game to draw it. But you're down 2-0 at the end of the first half. You better make sure that you get one back in the first half to make it 2-1 when you go into the tunnel, because that can shift that momentum. If you're down 2-0 at halftime, it's a lot harder to come back from that, especially against a team that is well coached, that's hitting their stride at the right time, and have nothing to lose. They're on the road. They're the 8th seed. They've been riding high, you know, beating Thierry Henry's Montreal. They beat the favorites in the Supporters Shield winners in Philly. And a lot of the MLS pundits were really favoring Orlando City. A lot of people thought they were going to make a run at MLS Cup this year, and they crashed and burned because they were not disciplined in that game against New England in the Eastern Conference semi, and New England were just able to get the win, thanks in part to Matt Turner saving a Nani penalty. Nani has taken 9 penalties now in MLS and has missed 4 of them.
Well, maybe that's not the job for him. Bart, let's turn this inside out. If you're Bruce Arena, how are you preparing your club between their ears for this game? What are you telling them? What are the points of order going on in the field?
Well, if I'm Bruce Arena, I'm telling them to just allow Columbus to walk through and score, just fill up the net with balls. But if Bruce Arena, you're trying to look at what Nashville was able to do well, which was really, I think, shut down the middle of the field. Lucas El Rayon, up until that beautiful outstep ball that he played over to Giassi, was probably as invisible as he's been for Columbus this season. And I think Nashville did a really good job of really negating him and just taking away kind of the middle of the park in general. That's a tall task though, against this team, and New England doesn't quite have, you know, the likes of Walker Zimmerman or Romney there at the center back position. But I think if you feel like you can force Columbus to play it the way that they were playing it down the wings against Nashville, even though that's, you know, what they were doing out of necessity against Nashville, or at least what I think Caleb Porter planned, I think you feel like you've got your best chances if Columbus is swinging balls into the box trying to find Giassi Zardes, because when they're starting to move around and Lucas El Rayon is able to start picking those holes out in the back four and in the middle of the field, then you're in a lot of trouble.
Well, and Ori, if there's one thing that we've talked about on this podcast the entire season, is our lack of success on dead balls and certainly corner kicks. We just, to save our lives, and it's not going to be fixed now, but to save our lives, we cannot figure out how to be dangerous on corner kicks.
Yeah, I mean, both from an offensive and a defensive standpoint, yeah. But you've seen teams where dead ball situations either win them games or lose them games. Luckily, the Crew is not in that situation where you know, lack of defending on set pieces or lack of a killer instinct on free kicks or on corners is really the difference between a victory and a defeat. So I think that is something that Columbus fans should take as a positive, because you could very easily have a team that cannot defend a corner kick to save their lives, and they just keep losing games because they can't defend a set piece. Set pieces can win you and lose you games, but because Columbus executes well in open play and scores goals from open play, defends well in open play too, they've had a successful season, especially at home. And obviously, you know, they've had their cards drawn. Every good card they've had drawn for this playoffs, especially on the Eastern side, they've had drawn. They've played the 6 seed, the 7 seed. Now they're going to play the 8 seed. They avoided Philly, Toronto, Orlando, New York City. And they're going to be at home for a third straight time.
Yeah.
And if Kansas City loses and they beat New England, Mapfre Stadium, the final time it's going to host an MLS Cup playoffs, will host MLS Cup.
December 12th. God knows what the weather is going to look like.
Oh,
and, you know, of the two Western matches that remain, and by the time we post the podcast, Seattle and Dallas will be over. Dallas is a plucky, very young team. They have no chance in Seattle, in my opinion. No chance. Minnesota, I give them more than a puncher's chance against Kansas City. There's a lot to like about that team. So we very well, if we can get past New England, would see the MLS Cup here in Columbus, and Don Garber coming back to visit us again. The first time since the groundbreaking for the stadium, I would assume. I don't think he likes hanging out here too much. But it is kind of a dream come true, isn't it, Alex? And unfortunately, we won't have a vaccine before then, so we won't be able to be in the stadium to give him a welcome. I don't know. Can we somehow safely be at the airport in spacesuits or something with cheeky signs? I don't know.
I don't know.
Deserve something.
The whole setup right now with MLS Cup, like if we host it, would be super weird, I think. Yeah. Because I think there would be a lot of pressure to allow some fans into that stadium. And I don't necessarily know if the precautions that have been put in place so far would stick for an event like that. It would be very interesting to see if they let people in.
Yeah.
As for Don Garber, I feel like, number one, he would 100% not travel to the match because he doesn't care.
He would have an out.
Yep. Yeah.
Right?
Franklin County is purple. I'm sorry. I just can't. Yeah. I can't.
Yeah. I have no choice but to watch the game from my evil lair on the New York coast in my little, summer home or whatever. I hate that man so much. He will watch it from a log cabin somewhere, warming his hands around a fire that's just like nothing but burning Crew jerseys or MLS 1.0 jerseys, right?
With his MLS to Austin jersey before they even had branding. Remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
Wear that with his scarf. Woo!
He's probably going to, just watch the game next to the billboard of all the other cities that he wants to put MLS 1.0 teams, Las Vegas, and, he's going to move whatever, Salt Lake to Las Vegas, and who knows where New England will end up in the final map, but I don't know. I would be perfectly fine if he did not show up. And honestly, I think that would be better. But whether or not we host or not, I don't know. I just hope we get to host so that our guys don't have to travel.
Yeah.
That would be the best case. We got to get by New England first.
Yeah. Well, we're putting the cart before the horse. And to that end, let's go ahead and make our picks. And we have a couple of other points to check off before we let you go and direct you towards Sunday at 3 o'clock. And it's on ABC, nationwide broadcast television. How about that? Ori, your pick first, please.
Well, it's the 8th Eastern Conference final for the Columbus Crew. Technically speaking, obviously it was like semifinals back in the late 90s when I was like 2 years old. But technically speaking, this is the 8th time the Crew have been at this stage where they are one win away from making MLS Cup final. They've only been able to get past that stage twice. I do believe that it will be a third time on Sunday. I have the Crew winning 2-1 in extra time against the New England Revolution. I think Columbus is going to continue playing their game at home. We've seen them do it 11 times before in 12 matches at Mapfre Stadium. And there was definitely a good family presence there for no public fans. There was a good atmosphere as well. The pumped in crowd noise too. The fireworks still gives that playoff atmosphere as well. They're pumped up and they are determined. Nothing can stop them. That's what they said after the COVID cases and everything. They said nothing is going to stop this team, no matter what. This has been the toughest season in MLS history, and Columbus has definitely dealt with a lot, having, you know, a COVID test at MLS's back, coming back from that and winning all three games at that tournament, having a game postponed in October because of two COVID positives, and then going and playing Orlando, having this condensed schedule, and then having six positive COVID cases and still winning a playoff game. Columbus Crew will make the MLS Cup final. And I do say that they will host the MLS Cup final on Hanukkah, December the 12th, against the Seattle Sounders.
Nice. I like it. On Hanukkah. Let's do it. Yeah, and the Sounders, I think, are an easy pick to make. I agree with you there. I mean, the pedigree and everything. And I think they're going to win fairly easily tonight. Let's go to Alex next for your pick.
So I don't want to even make this pick because I don't want it to come true, but I'm very worried we're going to win on penalties, but it's going to be 1-1 and half of the Crew fans are going to have a heart attack before the match ends. So yeah, it's going to, I predict it's going to be very close and very stressful. So I'm not looking forward to it, but I do think that we will advance. And I think that we will host as well. I think the Loons will get it done.
Okay. Bart. You're always good for a creative pick.
First, I want to say I got booted off the Zoom earlier as we were talking about Don Garber potentially being in Columbus for an.
Did Don Garber boot you off our Zoom?
I think so. And what I just want to say is what they need to do, because you know they are piping in crowd noise. If he is there, they need to pipe in the a recording of the Don Garber chant. When he is coming on to present the trophy, they need to pump in the Don Garber. But, you know, this is, I feel bad talking about all that because it is getting ahead of ourselves. They do have to take care of business against New England, but this will shock you. I believe Columbus Crew will take care of business against the New England Revolution. I'm going to go with a 3-2 game. I think this is going to be close no matter what. I do just think there are going to be goals because, I mean, the way that New England is playing, the way that, like, Bo and Carlos Gil, how good he has been since coming back from injury, you know, playing as one of the best, probably hottest players in the MLS right now, and certainly in that 10 position. But I think that Columbus continues to step up. This is a team that has played with so much adversity, and they also, I think, are, I don't know that they're quite peaking, but I think they're on the upward trend right now, because this is a team that also has just three losses since October 11th. And I have been playing well toward the end. You're getting your starters back. The key, of course, is going to be who, and hopefully not losing any other starters to this eighth and potentially ninth test. But I think Columbus takes care of business. I think Harrison Offal playoff goal. He's who played very well, I think, last game too, after getting a lot of and dumped on maybe fairly for the last game. I think he's going to get one.
Agreed. He did play well, and we were remiss in mentioning that. Alex, you're either frozen on my screen or you have a point.
No. I want to add something to Bart's idea about the Don Garber chant. So I think we should absolutely do the Don Garber chant, but I also think that we should sequence in, kind of alternate between the Don Garber chant and just a clip of Don Garber announcing the first pick of the MLS draft when he called LAFC Los Angeles Football Craft before chanting "Save the Crew" all around him. It was like, yes. Like just just keep flipping between those two clips. I think that would be great for the entirety of the time that he is at all.
And then awarding MLS Cup in 2008 to Guillermo Sparrow Saletto.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I hate that guy so much.
Oh, well, I mean, this is the only thing that keeps this story from being perfect is that we can't all be there together. Otherwise, it would be perfect. Oh, yeah. I mean, when you think about it. But we'll take what we can get in 2020. I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to say that New England's light goes out and the Crew lock it down completely defensively and win a fairly sedate game 2-0 with a goal in either half. And we're done in 90 minutes and we're out of there. It's going to be cold. I just checked the forecast. 35 degrees for a high on Sunday.
Whoa.
It's going to be a little
balmy. I will be freezing. Yay. Yes.
So, and I imagine there'll be a nice frozen tundra wind blowing across the fairgrounds and across Montfrey Stadium. Yep. It's December in Central Ohio. I don't know what else you can expect. All right, real quick. We have our predictions in. Greg Vanny I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alex.
Can I make another prediction? Williams will wear short sleeves and shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Short sleeves and
but
shorts.
Gloves.
35.
But he'll have gloves.
Yeah, he'll work. Absolutely. Gloves to protect the fingers, but short sleeves, shorts. None of that crap where it's like the undershirt that's like the compression shirt, long sleeves. None of that crap.
I'm sorry.
Short sleeves, shorts.
I watch games like this and I go, I would be the long sleeve shirt guy.
Give me a snood.
Every time.
Oh, totally.
I just
100%.
No, I can't be that.
That's why we're on the podcast and Josh Williams is on the pitch.
You know, when I was 11 or 12, we had a game in my hometown where it was below freezing. It was in November. The field was frozen. And I thought I would come out and be a man. And I'm so old that back then we had the tight shorts, you know, the tight shorts, short sleeve jersey. And I came out and played the entire first half and I about froze to death. And at halftime, I went and got my sweats and I went into a porta potty and put my sweats on and then put my uniform over that and then played the second half with my sweats under my uniform. So I learned my lesson at the age of 12 that, you know, there's a time to prove your manhood and there's a time to surrender to nature. And that's what I did. And I looked ridiculous. Only my mom could love me that day. I don't think I scored a goal or anything. It was pretty sad. But that's plain and cold. There, at least it's not going to snow. Because, we remember that MLS Cup of a few years ago was, 20 degrees in Toronto? It ruins the game. There's a point where it gets so cold that it ruins the game. So I think 35 during the afternoon, it's going to be okay. Speaking of Toronto, Greg Vanny resigned as manager and technical director of Toronto. Was that him seeing the writing on the wall or is he going somewhere else? Does anyone know? Ori, do you know? Where's he going?
Don't know. A lot of people were saying Galaxy is a potential possibility. Another project there in LA, rebuild one of the most successful franchises in Major League Soccer history. I'm sure he would get a nice paycheck over there.
Nicer weather.
Nicer weather as well than Toronto. I've been to both places, so I can say from experience that LA's weather is better than Toronto's. But, I mean, what a career he had for Toronto FC. Put them on the map as a powerhouse in Major League Soccer. But it'd be very interesting to see if he does go somewhere else in Major League Soccer or maybe he goes to do bigger and better things. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. But we'll see if the Galaxy is the team everybody's pointing as that sign to be in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a former Galaxy player.
Good point. Yeah, so duh.
It's quite possible that's where he'll end up. I kind of think he was a little bit overrated. I mean, they had such an amazing squad and basically unlimited money in Toronto, and they went on that kind of couple year run, but he has not been able to kind of get that team working again with some pretty amazing players in Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley a lot of the time. So. It'll be interesting to see how he does in LA. He's going to have a lot of money again to kind of play around with. So We'll see how he does, but my guess is that's where he'll end up.
Well, I mean, Toronto kind of started sliding down a little bit with our own Tim Bezpachenko. Yeah. Headed south of the border and home to Columbus. We appreciate his efforts here, and those are coming to fruition as your Crew SC take on New England in the Eastern Conference Final 2020, 3 p.m. Sunday at Montford Stadium. And again, that's going to be nationally telecast on ABC. You see it on Channel 6. So there's no trying to come up with the feed on your Twitter or your Instagram or whatever. It's going to be pretty easy to find. And I think it's going to be a fascinating match. And then we'll go from there. I'm confident that we're going to assemble early next week and we're going to talk about MLS Cup. Sound like a plan?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah, go we'll Crew. See.
Yeah. Like and subscribe, please, and leave us nice comments because we are, we're sensitive. Don't insult us. Just keep that to yourself. Be nice. There's enough bile flying around in 2020. Be nice to your Massive Report podcast. Ori, Bart, Alex, thank you so much. We'll watch together virtually on Sunday, and we'll see you next week for another edition of the Massive Report podcast.